Good morning, everybody. Today is Thursday, February 16th, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Thursday, everyone. It is a chilly 20 degrees and very cloudy. Looks like we had some snow overnight here in upstate New York. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show SpaceX, Mutant MRSA, Spider-Man, Plasmids, and Gene Editing the Future. We talked about all kinds of crazy things. Elon Musk keeps popping up in a lot of these stories. Elon, of course, has been talking about summoning the demon AI and how we need to now merge with the machine if we're ever going to compete. Well, Elon also has his SpaceX program and his Tesla program with the self-driving cars. But in his space program, SpaceX, we found out that on the 14th, 2 days ago, they sent up some MRSA on his SpaceX rocket up to the space station to do some experimentation to discover what would happen if we sent MRSA, which is a lethal superbug, as they call it, up to space, so it can mutate faster than it does on Earth, so we could get ahead of the game in trying to discover cures for antibiotic-resistant superbugs. Now, of course, remember Obama had an executive order back last year in July, I believe, about how we had to combat antibiotic resistance. We have all these new superbugs coming from who the hell knows where that are overtaking our capabilities cure humans. And of course, this seems to be the new mantra. This 21st Century Cures Act, 21st Century Medicine, is all about taking control of our healthcare and being able to cure things that never were curable before. But as this is going along, you notice we also are having these super virulent bugs that are appearing out of the blue in puddles in Denver. We read that story a while ago about, I don't even remember what the number was. It was some insanity, like 135 new branches of life were discovered in a waterway in Colorado, never before seen. It makes you wonder where this stuff is coming from. You know, they've been splicing and dicing viruses and bacteria in the lab for quite a while now. It now has become public knowledge because, like I said, it's all part of this 21st century cure everything. But long before that, we discovered that back in 1972, when Nixon inked that convention document, and I never remember what it's called, but I'll link to it, in regards to ending the chemical and biological warfare program in the United States, it was first talked about in 1969, we finally inked it in 1972, that ended the research that was going on at Plum Island and Fort Detrick, Maryland, all in the name of biological warfare. But biological warfare never ended, because the one thing that Nixon had said is that we are going to maintain our defensive posture, maybe your offensive posture, all in the name of developing vaccines against pathogens from other rogue nations. And that allowed them to keep their dirty little grubby hands on pathogens that could be utilized as bioweapons, that could be utilized to wipe out large numbers of people or farm animals or crops, because that's the way it always happens. But the sad fact of the matter is that this research has continued unabatedly down deep dark hallways and bloody doorways for many years now without anybody really watching the store, because it was all in the name of keeping us and our children safe. Vaccinations today, you know, they come out and anybody who questions a vaccine happens to be a tinfoil hat wearing lunatic. But I hate to tell you, if you have a baby and you start really looking into the ingredients in vaccinations and some of the things that they've done and the VAERS database and some of the damage it has done to children, some of the questions that are now arising about the safety and the ingredients that have been put into them. And you are going to discover that there is a really scary picture that has been happening under the covers, and that all of us have been subjected to some sort of human experimentation that has happened over the last 50 or 60 years without necessarily having our consent. We blindly agreed and lined up and got our vaccines. And yeah, I mean, well, I've talked about this before. Traditional immunotherapy introducing killed or just about killed small segments of a virus to your immune system should, in theory, cause your immune system to recognize it and mount an attack. But see, they had to start getting fancy. They had to put all kinds of different things, such as adjuvants, which will irritate your immune system and make your immune system overreact, so you can gain a better, quote unquote, better immunity. You know, we had a long discussion about an experience I had 20 some odd years ago with my cat, Oliver, and that rabies vaccine. You had the 1 year rabies and the 3 year rabies. The 3 year rabies had an aluminum adjuvant that would extend its protection to the animal for an additional few years because of utilizing the adjuvant to irritate the immune system. But what they started discovering is that it was causing sarcoma in animals. My cat was one of those unfortunate animals who had ended up with a very large sarcoma in his back leg. Now, there's a lot that goes into this. I mean, they don't give them injections in the neck anymore. I was reading something interesting, too, about that. I guess in cats, they no longer give injections in the neck anymore for vaccinations. They do it in different legs. So if a sarcoma does develop, they can easily amputate as opposed to the animal ending up with the cancer in their spinal cord. But from what I saw, dogs, there still are no rules. Dogs still do get them in the back of the neck. Adjuvants themselves have caused problems in humans as well. Squalene, that was utilized in the anthrax vaccine, was also utilized in the swine flu vaccine that was allowed into this country out of Europe. Had never been approved, but we declared a state of emergency because, you know, we didn't have enough vaccines and not enough people were getting injected. So they allowed squalene into this country. But don't worry about it, because that was just a newfangled human test that they were doing. They had something even better in the wings, and that was some of this new DNA vaccination that DARPA is working on, shape-shifting immune systems, to be able to genetically modify our immune systems to be able to identify, attack, and destroy, in theory, anything it comes into contact with, known or unknown. Now, in the middle of all of this, we had the 21st Century Cures Act get inked into law right before New Year. Actually, it was December 13th, 2016. That gets that pesky FDA and any minuscule safety testing that had been done beforehand out of the way. The FDA, remember, used to require some sort of efficacy safety testing. Used to require documentation to show that it at some point will be beneficial to humans before it was ever allowed to go into clinical trials. Well, that doesn't matter anymore, because with the 21st Century Cures Act, it now allows it to go directly to clinical trials. And if it does well in clinical trials, then maybe we can get approval to roll it out. 21st Century Cures, this is from the other day, lowers the confidence now in FDA-approved drugs and devices. Now, remember, we have all this crazy implant technology that is rolling out. We did a couple shows the other day on all the new fangled brain implants that are coming. And of course, Elon Musk and his neural lace that we're going to need to be able to augment ourselves and to merge with the machine in order to compete and not become their pets. You know, as these regulatory requirements have been lowered, it has become an orgy of medical discovery and experimentation that are now going to be done on humans very easily in the name of curing disease. Barack Obama signed the 21st Century Cures Act on December 13, 2016, bringing into law a piece of healthcare policy legislation that some describe as a landmark. And of course, we also found out the large majority of Congress that railroaded this bill through both the House and the Senate and put it on Obama's desk were all invested in biotechnology stocks. Of course, that is okay, because everybody looks the other way when you insider trade in Congress. This act is the result of years of debate on how best to approach a wide range of healthcare policy goals, from funding to approval of new drugs to the growing nationwide problem of opioid abuse as well. And yes, there's drug abuse and a whole mental health component. We discussed that as well. We have good old Tommy Insel, who left as the director of the National Institute of Mental Health, went over to Google's Verily division, and is now working on developing diagnostics utilizing smartphone applications and the sound of your voice for mental disease, as well as 21st Century Cures. And remember, as part of this 21st Century Cures Act, there is also a neurological surveillance component to this, where anyone who's been dubbed as mentally ill can be non-invasively surveilled to make certain that they are progressing with their treatment. First introduced in the House in January of 2015, and we talked about it that very day. The new law, 21st Century Cures, went through seven iterations and grew to more than 1,000 pages before landing on Obama's desk. And the final version invests in new therapies, injects money into healthcare research, and named initiatives, including the Brain Project, and changes standards for drug and device approval by the Food and Drug Administration. And many legislators who supported this bill have hailed it as a boom to innovation. But others, like Jewel, are less optimistic. Yes, they dumped billions of dollars now into precision healthcare, the Brain Initiative, 21st Century Cures, mad science gone man, experimentation on humans without due diligence to prove safety before they experiment on people. And in the meantime, there are going to be lots and lots and lots of tech billionaires all invested in longevity medicine, biopharma, biotech. And it's going to be you and me, this time legally, this time with us stepping right up, asking, begging, while we are desperate and dying, for these cures to be able to further humanity. The All of Us program was created all in the name of us stepping right up and doing it for the good of all. Become a part of the experiment. Give us a swab of your DNA. Get into the DNA database that we can then sequence. Try to come up with new drugs and new cures by discovering the chinks in the human armor. Discovering the ways that we can cure all of our human foibles with technology. That's where we've come to, people. That's where we are. We are at the cusp of this right now. We are in month two of the 21st Century Cures Act being law. And it just is not going to stop. Every single day, there are new items that come out that they are now going to test for the very first time on humans. It's some new miraculous way to, quote unquote, fix us. In a time characterized by political stalemate, the bipartisan passage of the 21st Century Cures Act was noteworthy, but achieving support from both sides of the aisle necessitated a variety of trade-offs. For example, the act allocated $4.8 billion to the National Institute of Health and then provided an additional $1 billion for over 2 years for a response to the opioid crisis in the form of prevention and treatment activities. Because remember, addiction is also a mental disease. It provides additional funding for precision medicine initiative as well, and $1.8 billion for former Vice President Joe Biden's cancer moonshot. We heard him talk about that. Jennifer Doudna was at that event talking about how wonderful CRISPR was going to be for finding cures for cancer. And by the way, they made a ruling yesterday. I don't know if I queued that one up, but they made a ruling yesterday in regards to CRISPR. There has been a battle going on as to who owns the patents, which scientists on which coast, whether or not it was going to be on the East Coast or the West Coast, Jennifer Doudna's group in California or Georgie Porgy Church's group at Harvard and MIT. And guess what? They ruled that Harvard, the Broad Institute of Harvard and MIT, actually now wins the patent on CRISPR. Of course, that is the same establishment that has gotten tons of money from DARPA to be able to develop molecular manufacturing, DNA manufacturing, to be able to create sequences on the fly. And Georgie Porgy Church is the one who wants to create the synthetic human genome. So look out, people, because here it comes. So I'm sure Georgie's rubbing his hands together. We also found out Georgie Porgy Church is the one that is advising that CEO, one of two that we have read about, that have made themselves guinea pigs of their own company's technology. That CEO yesterday of Butterfly something had tested some new longevity medicine, some gene therapy on himself. He injected it into his thigh and then went to a plastic surgeon and got electrocuted to open up his muscle cells to absorb that DNA. George Church was advising him, monitoring him to see what kinds of weird things would happen after he did that to himself. George Church is like the rotten cherry on top of a lot of this technology. We heard an interview with him, oh, probably 2, 3, 4 months ago. It's actually in my Before the First Cup archive. By the way, any new listeners out there who want to find my archives, they are all on YouTube on UCY's channel. If you go to UCY.TV/... Actually, go to UCY.TV/BTFC for Before the First Cup. Scroll down to the bottom of the page and you're going to see all the YouTube videos listed. You can hit a load more button and there are, who knows, 400 and some odd episodes all on this type of technology from the last 3 or 4 years. Anyway, back to the story. So yes, and $1.8 billion for Joe Biden's Cancer Moonshot Project. It also invests in the mental health treatment and the president's brain initiative to help, of course, Alzheimer's patients and traumatic brain injuries from PTSD or whatever, where they're going to be doing brain implants and brain modeling. Don't forget, though, all this brain research is also going into recreating a human brain. It's a part of some of these AI initiatives that are going on all over the globe as well. However, the subtle changes to the approval process for new drugs and medical devices included in the 21st Century Cures Act could weaken the FDA's regulatory oversight, which, like I said, wasn't really much of an oversight to begin with, as could a provision that permits off-label promotion of healthcare economic information. Obama and the White House provided strong support for the act, but others such as Senator Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders believe that the provisions may compromise the FDA's ability to ensure the efficacy and safety of medical products and outweigh the law's positives. And that's what I've been saying all along. We focus here on the potential changes the act will have on the regulation of medical products and the affecting results on physicians and patient trust in the safety and efficacy of those products. And consumers need to be aware of these changes. And if you noticed, there was no headline in any paper that I ever saw, in any fake news on TV, on the alphabets, that talked about this act, that talked about what this act stood for, or how it was going to speed the approval process with a rubber stamp to get these cures to the consumer directly. And the consumer, of course, is going to eat it up. Now, what I have seen are commercial after commercial in regards to all these new treatments for cancer. Bring in Nana and Auntie Susie and get your little nanobots in your blood. We have all these great new ways that we are experimenting with to cure you. Be one of the very first to step up to get this treatment. And let's see what happens. You have no other choice. You're going to die. So step right up and we'll see what we can do. I mean, guys, this is Experimentation on Humans 101. And now they have our consent. Consumers need to be aware of these changes and must understand that the evidence required for drug approval may now be less rigorous than it has been in the past. And even in the past, like we've talked about before, there have been many drugs that have been approved by the FDA that, you know, a year later, you're seeing ambulance chaser lawyers putting ads on TV as your loved one been injured or died from utilizing XYZ drug or implants. Well, call us because there are bazillions of dollars waiting in a lawsuit because it damaged and killed thousands of people. You know, the FDA was not perfect. The FDA left a lot to be desired. But the way to fix that was not to get the FDA out of the way and allow the free market to rule. Okay, these drug companies have been chomping at the bit to get inside of you. There really is not a lot of liability to begin with when you get into vaccinations and things of that nature. And then if they add the spin to it that it's all being done in the name of public safety or dealing with an emergency, keeping you safe, you know, there's going to be no holds barred. We talked about that strategic stockpile of vaccines that allowed them to stockpile experimental drugs in case of the name of an emergency that would allow them to utilize things that were never approved on humans. If we had some sort of outbreak or pandemic that happens, well, this just even got that out of the way. They don't even need to use the strategic stockpile and those loopholes anymore to get these untested drugs tested on humans. All you got to do is sign up for a clinical trial. The primary effects of this newly approved drug approval process will be that there is less safety for consumers. 21st Century Cures Act changes the standards of evidence required for drug and device approval. Many of these changes are discretionary, but may have the result of weakening the traditional standards required by the FDA with an unpredictable long-term effect on drug safety and efficacy. And, you know, we are not just talking about blood pressure medication or cholesterol drugs that shrink your brain. I was just reading more about that. We are now talking about 21st century medicine, literally nanobots in your blood, brain implants, AI, and Dr. Watson running the show and learning about genomics and treating cancer with all kinds of newfangled technologies, all in the hopes of curing you. How many of us in our most desperate moment are going to be willing to further research by rolling the dice, playing a crapshoot, to see if any of this will work on us? Because I will guarantee you, even me, who sits here and says I'm never going to allow nanobots in my blood, if it comes to the day where I'm laying on my deathbed and they're like, hey, Watson, Dr. Watson just discovered that there may be a clinical trial out there, Jewel, that could just very well save you. That dangling carrot is going to be really, really tough to not chomp on and give it a last shot. And it's very frightening to me because we are going to be the first generation that lays the groundwork for our not too distant transhumanist future for our children and our grandchildren. And that is what it is all about. And I know it sounds nuts, but it's not. Everything I read points to that very scenario in our future, and it gets scarier still. Bringing new medical products to market efficiently is a laudable goal, but government must walk carefully the fine line between the speed of drug approval and the rigor of the approval process. The next FDA commissioner, along with the Health and Human Services Secretary designate, will have a very large role in interpreting the language on drug and device regulation in this 21st Century Cures Act, and President Trump's choice of commissioner will therefore have an especially great impact on the regulatory process. And I'm still waiting to kind of gauge what is happening there. I know they just appointed somebody as Health and Human Services Director, and, you know, I honestly have not looked into who he is or what he stands for. But the one thing we did discover is when Trump got elected president, biotech stocks went through the roof. So that tells me that anyone or anything that gets put into office is going to be all balls out for pushing 21st century cures. So IBM Watson has been very involved in all of this. We have AI that is behind a lot of our 21st century medicine today. I had a story here somewhere. You know, too many tabbies means I can't find anything, but hold on, maybe we can. Yes, here we go. All right. This is in a publication called Investing News, Medical Device Investing, How Medicine is Now Going to Be Using Artificial Intelligence. Artificial intelligence is revolutionizing technology, but also medicine, and here is how. Narrow artificial intelligence, or non-sentient AI, and this is a distinction that we've talked about before. There's narrow AI, and that is AI that is written to do a particular task, like figure out your taxes or cure cancer. But then there is general AI, and general AI is the one that Elon Musk fears. That is AI that will be able to act like a human brain, not just focus on one particular task. It'll be able to look at a situation and come up with solutions regardless of what the topic is. And we should be afraid. Deep learning and neuromorphic computing is increasing with leaps and bounds in its capabilities. We're going to look at some of that today. But as regards to narrow AI, we have Amazon utilizing it to recommend additional products based on your previous purchases. Walmart does that as well. Google fills in your search queries. We found out Google's search engine head stepped down last year, and the search engine division was taken over by the guy that was running the AI division, and they plugged Google's deep brain into the back end of Google searches. So yes, that is AI now as well. Siri also responds to your voice. And Siri, we discovered in an interview with the outgoing DARPA chief, that Siri was a DARPA creation in the beginning. But more often than not, we tend to trust the information that we receive from these algorithms. But are we prepared to do the same when it comes to our healthcare? Well, Dr. Watson wants you to. That is for sure. AI is revolutionizing technology, but also in medicine, and here is how. At Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Institute, we've talked about this place many times before. This is where IBM Watson has done his residency. Physicians are now training a new kind of colleague. And remember, every bit of information that we feed the machine is learning from and becoming smarter than us. This new kind of colleague is the Watson Oncology Program. Developed by IBM, this system helps organize a massive amount of data, the better to design treatment pathways for cancer patients. And when we heard an interview from 60 Minutes in regards to what Watson was doing in the realm of cancer, we discovered that at Sloan Kettering, Watson had actually outdone a boardroom in a weekly meeting that they have looking at the most troubled cancer cases. Watson had come up with treatments that 20 seasoned oncologists had not even thought of for some of these patients. And we've been discussing how not only do we have this rise of the machine that someday may be our overlords, but this machine is going to be putting many people out of work. You know, they've talked about blue-collar jobs and the lower end of the spectrum being upturned by mechanization that has been happening for 20 or 30 years in the factories. Go back to places such as Ford and GM that have been putting robotics on the assembly lines for quite a number of years now. But we are now talking about white-collar jobs, about jobs that required a large amount of education, such as an oncologist or a lawyer. Remember Ross, the first employed AI lawyer that was also back-ended by IBM's Watson. We're going to have self-driving cars, putting taxi drivers, bus drivers, truck drivers, over-the-road truck drivers out of jobs. And we're going to end up with an entire society eventually who has nothing to do as the machines run the store and they promise us a land of plenty. But that is not going to be the way that it turns out, people. Remember, my fifth grade teacher taught me one thing that I never forgot. Mr. Feinauer, there is no free lunch. There is no free lunch at all. If we are sitting around and being fed grapes by our home emotionally in-tune robot, getting our paychecks every week, doing nothing, there's got to be some way that we are going to pay for that. I'm going to postulate that the way we're going to pay for that is to be the sacrificial guinea pig for big pharma and augmentation medical devices to make us better, to cure us. Because, you know, when people get bored, people get dangerous. People start to think of doing things that maybe they wouldn't normally do just for a little excitement in life. And that would not be good with an entire society of bored people. They're going to have to find a way to manipulate and control us. There was actually DARPA's biotechnology office page that I was looking at yesterday. There was a project that was all about being able to find monitoring and control systems for neurological processes, which was very frightening. When you add to that, in the 21st Century Cures Act, that neurological surveillance addendum that was included, at some point in the not-too-distant future, we are all going to become a node on the internet of everything. Anyway, back to Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Institute, utilizing Dr. Watson. Dr. Mark Chris explains, just like we would teach a trainee in medical oncology or surgical oncology, we are teaching the Watson system. Doctors feed information into Watson for oncology, allowing it to learn the appropriate treatment options, and the system then consolidates this huge amount of data and reduces it to the key decision-making indicators for other physicians to use going forward. In that way, Watson Oncology facilitates professional development, allowing doctors everywhere to learn from specialists. Yeah, but what happens when they've taught Watson everything he needs to learn and Watson starts learning on his own? We found out he can read a million pages a second. How long is it going to be before Watson in any of these different general AIs becomes more intelligent than the humans that taught it. So I'm going to say the law of exponential returns, not very long. At the same time, Watson can improve the patient experience by reducing the number of medical tests required and allowing the physician to plan a more personalized precision medicine therapy. Having the information and wisdom at your fingertips is going to make every doctor the most experienced doctor in the world for taking care of that particular problem, says Dr. Larry Norton, the deputy physician in chief for Memorial Sloan Kettering's breast cancer program. This has the potential of totally changing the way we conduct medicine. Da, da, da. And again, yes, it will, but I hate to tell Dr. Larry Norton that it isn't going to be for the benefit of any of us. It is going to be the machine that learns it all, and we are going to become the defective humans. As we start teaching artificial intelligence all of our different chinks in the armor, all of our weaknesses, all of our potential foibles, remember, humans are not perfect. Humans have defects. Artificial intelligence will be able to exploit those defects. And if we take it one step further and look at institutions such as DARPA, who's been funding a lot of this research, who's been sprinkled dollar funding at universities and hospitals for a very long time, for a lot of these different technologies, including the Brain Project, it's got to make you worry that DARPA is actually a part of the Department of Defense. We listened to a clip from Lip TV, I think that was on Monday, where the host was just coming to these conclusions, postulating how horrifying this is going to be as AI starts to get smarter than us and AI starts to become autonomous, and a lot of these developments are going to be utilized in the war machine. How safe is that going to make us? How are we going to be protected from it turning on us? We already found out that AI is smarter than the average American. An AI model performed in the 75th percentile for American adults on the RPM intelligence test. That's got to be frightening because we are just at the very beginning of this new technology. And if it's already smarter than the average American adult, give it a few more years of development and there's going to be no turning back. AI software is now juggling probabilities to learn from less data. A company named Gamelon, which sounds like it came out of a Godzilla movie, has developed a technique that lets machines learn to recognize concepts and images and text much more efficiently. Now, we found out there's already been a couple cases of Google's AI learning all by itself without any human intervention. And that really is a key point in the Turing test. You know, AI, up until just recently, and I still have a friend that argues this with me, that AI is nothing because it requires human input to learn. But the problem is AI is developing and beginning to learn on its own. We won't be able to stuff that genie back in the bottle. We found out the other day that Mayhem, the software that was developed and won the Grand Cyber Challenge from DARPA at, I don't remember the conference, whatever it was called, one of the hacker cons in Vegas this past summer. That Mayhem software was the shape-shifting immune system for the internet. It was going to be able to search, seek, and destroy any vulnerabilities, any attackers and hackers without any human intervention. We found out a couple days ago that Mayhem The software that won the shape-shifting immune system for the internet is now being utilized commercially as part of beta testing. They are already letting it out in little sippies to the internet to see what's going to happen. And mark my words, it is the beginnings of Skynet. It does not require human intervention. It is a sentry to scan the perimeter, seek and destroy, without us telling it what to do. Guys, we cannot let this stuff go, because once it's out there, there will be no getting that genie back. Once it learns and gets smarter than us, and like I said, everything we feed the machine, all of our data we put online is a potential learning tool for these machines. Machine learning is becoming extremely powerful, but it also requires extreme amounts of data. Well, don't worry, we got lots of that. You can, for instance, train a deep learning algorithm to recognize a cat with a cat fancier's level of expertise, if you show it YouTube. But you'll need to feed it tens or even hundreds of thousands of images of felines, capturing a huge amount of variation in shape, size, texture, lighting, and orientation. And it would be a lot more efficient if, like a person, an algorithm could develop an idea about what makes a cat from fewer examples. Well, a Boston-based startup called Gamelon has developed a technology that lets computers do this in some situations, and it is now releasing two products this Tuesday, so 2 days ago, based on this approach. If the underlying technique can be applied to many other tasks, it could have a huge impact. The ability to learn from less data should make us scared. Could let robots explore and understand new environments very quickly, or allow computers to learn about your preferences without sharing your data. Yeah, because it's just going to surveil you. Gamelon uses a technique that is called Bayesian program synthesis to build algorithms capable of learning from fewer examples. Bayesian probability, named after an 18th century mathematician, Thomas Bayes, provides a mathematical framework for refining predictions about the world based on experience, just like the human brain. Gamelon's system uses probabilistic programming, or code that deals in probabilities rather than specific variables, to build a predictive model that explains a particular data set. And from just a few examples, a probabilistic program can determine, for instance, that it is highly probable that cats have ears, whiskers, and tails. As further examples are provided, the code behind the model is rewritten and the probabilities are tweaked. And this provides an efficient way to learn the salient knowledge from data. Now, there was a conference the other day. I don't remember what it was called. The RSA Security Conference. RSA makes those little key fobs that generate codes constantly for connecting to your virtual private network. They have been around for quite a number of years. They do a lot of other things. Alphabet's Eric Schmidt says, quote, "I was proven completely wrong about artificial intelligence." Now, if you remember, Eric Schmidt was one of those people at the time. I don't know. I think he was CEO of Google. We had listened to a couple interviews by him. One was about longevity. One was about the future of technology. And one of the things Eric Schmidt had talked about was how we shouldn't be worrying about AI, because it's not going to get there yet. Don't worry about killer robots, guys, because it's all a bunch of phooey and hype. And I've been telling you all along that we should be worrying about it, because it's happening way faster than we ever imagined in the back room. We have actually found quite a number of stories now where, even though they're telling us on the front end not to worry about it, Skynet is not coming. That we have these people who are in the trenches that, as they're all excited telling us about their new discovery, one of the little lines that always slips is, quote, "This is happening way faster than we ever imagined." And it is. So Eric Schmidt now comes out yesterday says, quote, "I was proven completely wrong about artificial intelligence." While leading Google through the aughts, Eric Schmidt made a miscalculation. "I was completely wrong about artificial intelligence," says Alphabet's executive chairman at the RSA Security Conference in San Francisco yesterday. It was yesterday, Wednesday. Schmidt has initially been skeptical about the technology, and he has since acknowledged how vital it is to both the company's mission and the global economy. And remember, Davos 2017, we listened to that conference. Ginni Rometty, IBM CEO, was there and gave a good lecture about how important AI is to the global economy. Of course, that's what Davos is, the Global Economic Forum. And how Watson is going to touch everyone's lives within the next 5 years. Well, indeed, Google's current CEO, Sundar Pichai, has described the world as having entered now an AI-first era. The preceding phase was a focus on all things mobile and smartphone first, according to Pichai, who succeeded Larry Schmidt after a second CEO stint by Google co-founder Larry Page. Schmidt's assessment back then was that artificial intelligence research faced tremendous obstacles that was going to inhibit its progress. He did not think that it would scale, he says, of the machine learning technology. And he said he also didn't think that it would generalize, which that's what I was telling you, the dangerous version of AI, meaning become more flexible and elastic like the human mind, rather than remaining a specialized tool, and that would be narrow AI, suited only to specific tasks. Schmidt had underestimated the power of simple algorithms to emulate very complex things, he said, while qualifying that we are still in the baby stages of doing conceptual learning. And that's what scares me, people. We are still in the baby steps. And as technology begets technology, it will happen faster and faster. So I'm not even going to give it 5 years. I'm telling you right now, from what I'm seeing on a daily basis as to advancements that are happening, and these stories are coming up faster every single day, the human race is in trouble. We are in big trouble. In other words, computer scientists are still teaching machines to heuristically categorize basic elements of the world, like building representations of things and actions by parsing the components of images like color, shapes, and lines, as well as sounds like tones and pitches. General AI, or mimicking the elasticity of human thought, is still decades away from reality by Schmidt's estimation. But he has become more bullish about the prospect in recent years. Yeah, it is not decades away. The moment that changed everything, he said, was the success of a particular Google experiment involving neural networks in 2012. Ironically, Schmidt said the team's creation didn't uncover some major mathematical breakthroughs. Rather, it found something more mundane. You'd think it would have been a discovery of basic set theory, but instead, it was the discovery of what? Oh, cats on YouTube. Like I told you, kitty cats on YouTube sold out the human race. Indeed, the Google Brain team had tasked thousands of computer processors with recognizing objects in YouTube video thumbnail images. The result, which was an ability to distinguish cats, helped launch a wave of renewed interest in the field of deep learning. And as far as questions about apocalyptic scenarios like robot uprisings, Schmidt echoed statements that he had made in the past by throwing water on alarmists like Jules. Quote, he says, "These are important philosophical questions, but ones that we are not facing right now. So go back to sleep. Google's working on it. We'll tell you when it's ready." In Schmidt's view, the positives far outweigh the negatives for AI. Things that bedevil us, like traffic accidents and medical diagnoses, We'll get better, he says. I will stake my reputation. That will be the real narrative in the next 5 years. Ding-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling. By 2021, people. And it sounds like that Ford is also betting $1 billion on 2021. What is behind Ford's $1 billion investment on artificial intelligence? Well, it is self-driving excellence. Now, Ford is not the only car company that has dumped $1 billion into AI. We read about Toyota in California bringing on Gil Pratt, who was the former head of the DARPA Grand Challenge with robotics, where Atlas was created. Gil Pratt is now running the Toshiba Artificial Intelligence Center in California that they dumped $1 billion into. Why is Ford investing $1 billion over 5 years in a Pittsburgh startup called Argo AI? Well, it is looking to gain an edge in self-driving car technology in the four-year countdown to 2021. And that is when Ford, it says, that it will be shipping cars with autonomous driving. Several other automakers said in 2016 that they will have self-driving cars by 2021 as well. Ford CEO Mark Field says, with Argo's AI agility and Ford scale, we are combining the benefits of technology startups with the experience and discipline we have at Ford. And Ford will continue to work on the self-driving vehicle platform, including sensors, while Argo AI will build the virtual driver system. Here's the deal. Carnegie Mellon in Pittsburgh. Now, what's so interesting about this is Carnegie Mellon is where Obama gave his speech on how the future president is going to have AI in his future. This is where they tipped it all off. This is where they've been doing a lot of the research for a lot of these technologies, not only AI, but also in gene editing. We found out that's where the experiment for CRISPRing the first human was supposed to be happening, and I don't know whatever happened to that. They were still waiting on FDA approval. But Carnegie Mellon in Pittsburgh is one of the world's leaders in autonomous driving and artificial intelligence. Grads and professors there have spun off or started several autonomous driving startups, including Auto Makita, which has since been purchased by Delphi. And now Argo AI, one of Uber's autonomous driving test fleets in Pittsburgh, is in Pittsburgh because of the Carnegie Mellon connection. Ford will be a majority stakeholder in Argo, and some of Ford's engineers may shift to Argo. And as Ford notes, through their equity participation, $1 billion worth, Argo AI employees will share in the startup's growth, which is a more polite way of saying, quote, possibly get rich beyond their wildest dreams. How frightening is that? This is all about releasing the machine on planet Earth into every aspect of our lifestyle. And do you need help with your taxes this year? Well, tax season is coming. Don't worry about it. Watson is now here for you at H&R Block. It is inevitable, believe it or not, it is fast approaching. We are talking, of course, about tax season, and this year, IBM Watson wants to help. Last week, the AI system announced a partnership with H&R Block to reinvent tax preparation. And by integrating Watson Smarts, H&R Block promises that its tax professionals will, quote, deliver the best outcome for each unique tax situation while helping clients better understand how different filing options can impact their tax outcome. So again, another white-collar job getting ready to go out a window. Watson is going to be your lawyer, your doctor, and your tax preparer. Now, as Goldman Sachs embraces automation, even the masters of the universe are threatened. Software that works on Wall Street is changing how business is done and who profits from it. at its height back in 2000, the U.S. cash equity trading desk at Goldman Sachs New York headquarters employed 600 traders buying and selling stocks on orders of the investments of its largest clients. Today, guess what? There are only two, count them two, from 600 to two equity traders left. Yes, automated trading programs have taken over the rest of the work, supported by 200 computer engineers. Marty Chavez, the company's deputy chief financial officer and former chief information officer, explains all this to attendees at a symposium on computing's impact on economic activity held at Harvard's Institute for Applied Computational Science last month. The experience of its New York traders is just one early example of a transformation of Goldman Sachs and increasingly other Wall Street firms that began with the rise of computerized trading, but has accelerated over the past 5 years, moving into more fields of finance than humans once dominated. Chavez, who will become chief financial officer in April, says areas of trading like currencies and even parts of business lines like investment banking are moving in the same automated direction that equities traveled. And for the highly paid few who remain, there is a growing income spread that mirrors the broader economy. The pay of the average managing director at Goldman will probably get an even bigger, but there are fewer lower-level people to share the profits with. Trading algorithms with machine learning capabilities replace trades where the price of what is being sold was easy to determine on the market. And now, more of these highly paid individuals are going to find themselves on the unemployment line. So guess what, people? Universal basic income. Elon Musk doubles down on universal basic income. Quote, he says, it is going to be necessary. And I think it's coming, people. There is no free lunch. Universal basic income means that we become the guinea pigs. All right, guys, have an awesome Thursday, and I will catch up with you tomorrow.
Anti-Media Radio.